Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer-Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
This week, we've got the return of James Bond coming back to theaters after the bankruptcy of MGM. You also have Lincoln coming back to theaters after killing vampires. And you also have Blu-rays and DVDs. We'll talk a little bit about some news that's happening surrounding some of these movies and stories.
Wow.
So, yeah, we got a lot of stuff. First, we want to hit the box office, actually. We're kind of moving this up because we want to kind of talk about how things have been affected by different movies and what to expect coming up next week and see how accurate we were. Last week, we both said Wreck-It Ralph was going to win.
Oh, yeah.
And it did. We didn't throw out numbers, but the number that Wreck-It Ralph won with was pretty significant.
It's pretty impressive.
$49 million, and that's actually the highest non-Pixar Disney animated film opening. I know that's categorizing it kind of far down the line.
The highest non-Pixar Disney opening about a video game villain.
See, there you go. But no, I think the last one, it was better than Tangled, which was in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So those were all done by Disney Animation, whereas like Toy Story 3 just ripped apart.
Well,
that was like $100 million its first weekend, I think. Something like that. $90 million. So yeah, $49 million is extremely impressive.
Not bad at all.
For early November, this is even before technical holiday season.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think either of us thought. I thought it was going to be like 40-ish.
Yeah, you know me. I let you take care of the numbers.
You're like, it was...
I liked it.
It was going to be more than a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And Flight also came in with a somewhat overperformed, impressive $24.9 million, which
But you look at those commercials and it looks like a good movie.
I'm really interested to see what it does next week.
Oh, yeah.
Because, it's getting great reviews and it's got a good cinema score, which is kind of scary.
I don't know which movie those people saw.
Maybe they went out and got popcorn in the middle of it.
So, you mean for everything but the first half hour?
They took like... like hours to get popcorn. They took an hour and a half to get popcorn, and they came back and they go, "Hey, this is the same movie it started." But there was, but that's also in line with what Denzel Washington does with his early movies. So,
that's true.
He usually opens around $20 million. And they were hoping for Universal was lowballing it at $20 million, but it did overperform. And there was also Argo came in with 10.2, which was good. It's up to $75.9 million for the domestic total. The Man with the Iron Fist did not do well. It was lower than the other titles around that genre. If you talk like Machete and Hobo with a Shotgun, although that never got like a wide, big, huge theatrical release. That was $7.9 million. And it had a C-plus cinema score. I actually got a chance to see it. It was not a good movie.
That's what I hear. I haven't heard anything good about it. So.
It was kind of a mess. Things kind of came out of nowhere. What was bizarre about Man with the Iron Fist is it was... an exploitation movie, had tons of violence and lots of sexual overtones. It took place, I'd say about 80% of the movie takes place in a brothel, not one naked woman in the entire movie.
Well, it can't be a successful brothel.
I take that to heart. This
I know, that's,
cut me deep.
That's kind of offensive for you.
In fact, the only breasts you saw were Russell Crowe's.
Well, there's that.
And they were a little bit hairy, but not what you'd want. You also saw they had this one guy, big muscular, and he had his shirt off through the entire thing. And then the RZA. You got to see the RZA with his somewhat – it wasn't as flabulous as Russell Crowe's breasts were. But.
So there were a lot of man breasts is what you're saying.
Yes.
And not a lot of women.
Flabulous. Anyways, then there was Taken 2 at 5.9. It's over $100 million. Cloud Atlas sunk a little bit. It was only 5.4 million, and it's a small drop. It was 44%, which isn't bad, but that's just still low from the opening numbers.
Well, there's 80 million that they still need to make back for that one.
They might get it back on video, on home video in the Philippines. Then there's like Hotel Transylvania, Paranormal Activity 4, Here Comes the Boom, Silent Hill Revelations. All the horror movies are going to get dumped out of the top 10 by next week because
we're moving on.
Halloween's over. That's it. Speaking of moving on, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer-Kramer. If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. That email address is going to change, by the way. We're going to switch it up. We're going to get a fatguysatthemovies.com address.
Ooh.
Because the show's been around for 5 years. We're moving up in the world. We're like the Jeffersons.
Nice. Can we sing about that?
But
I'm not going to sing.
Yes, sing.
No.
Sing.
I'm not going to do that. I made that mistake once before.
Should we just do like a William Shatner spoken word version of the Jeffersons, we're moving on up
to
the sky.
That was
to a deluxe apartment. Right now, I really want William Shatner to do a spoken word album based on old TV shows.
Oh.
Could you imagine him doing, like, the Golden Girls?
Nice.
Thank you for being a friend. Down the road. Back again. Then you get, like, Henry Rollins to do this spoken word.
Oh, see, now that would be an album.
And you could, and I would give him, like, I don't know, like, the Blossom theme or something like that for Henry Rollins.
He would do it, and he would love it. Know that.
Well, like, Full House. At the end, he's like, da-da-da-da-da-da, and he'd just yell it and get really mad with his tattooed arms.
He's an angry man.
Yeah. I expect to get some money from that idea. I don't know when. If you want to leave
us a
voice.
We'll call our people.
We did get an email this week. We're going to read that later in the show.
Yes.
You can reach us on voicemail 740-205-6456. You can get us on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/FGATM, and twitter.com/KevinCarr for me and for you.
KDK Reviews.
KDK Reviews.
Yes. And you can also find me on nightsandweekends.com and realdiscovery.org.
Yay!
Now, we have a little movie coming out this week.
A little independent film.
People may have heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. A little James Bond film.
A little James Bond? Is it like, it's like Little Archie or James Bond.
Nice.
And you have like Little M.
That would be an interesting movie. Maybe they could animate it.
That
would be kind of fun.
Like in that old sort of like 70s Hanna-Barbera style.
Oh, totally.
And like James Bond could have a teddy bear sidekick, like an Ewok.
Nice. See, we need to call our people and get them to work on this.
We're just pooping out great ideas on this show right now.
This is a big week for us. I don't know what's going on this week, but we are on.
Hollywood, are you listening?
Yes.
Little James Bond.
Yes. Anyway, now you pointed out something this week that I hadn't heard.
Ah. Because I'm in the know.
Yes.
Because I have Google.
You know, Daniel Craig still has a couple of Bond movies left.
Mm-hmm.
He has a contract for two more, right?
I believe it's two more, which would put him at five, and I think it's Roger Moore did seven. Sean Connery did six, if you don't count Never Say Never Again.
Okay. But it sounds like Barbara Broccoli is already looking for her next Bond.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly Idris Elba.
So what do you think about that?
Well, and this came from Naomi Harris did an interview with the Huffington Post. And if you know, Naomi Harris plays a field agent in the new movie.
Right.
And she did a BBC production with Idris Elba because he's from London. He's a native Londoner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's British. And if you've ever seen Luther, have you ever watched Luther on the BBC?
I haven't, no.
It's sort of this gritty cop show where he's a bit of a corrupt cop type thing.
Okay.
But she did an interview with the Huffington Post and it dropped at the end of October, in which she said, quote, "I didn't realize that there was this talk. And then I did a film with Idris and he said that he met Barbara Broccoli," who is, of course, the James Bond producer.
Right.
She's not from VeggieTales. And that is,
she might be.
She could be. That would be. I wish they did a Cubby Broccoli in VeggieTales.
Nice.
Because Cubby Broccoli was the guy who first did it. Albert was his real name. And she goes, and that it seems like there is a possibility in the future that there could be very well be a black James Bond. When Daniel Craig was going up for the role, a lot of people kind of were bothered by the fact that he was blonde.
Blonde, yeah. That was a big deal.
That really got under people's skin. I don't know why.
I think there are a lot of things about Daniel Craig that make him very un-Bond. And his hair...
Yeah.
Is probably the least of them.
He's not the way Ian Fleming originally pictured him. I mean, really, he's like a David Niven or a Cary Grant was originally what he's supposed to be. And Sean Connery kind of had that. Roger Moore was probably more like Ian Fleming's Bond than Sean Connery was. I think you can't just throw anybody into the character black or white because, you know, Eddie Murphy as James Bond would be terrible.
Eddie Murphy, as most anything, is pretty terrible these days. So
very true.
There's that.
But after watching Luther,
I think
Idris Elba could actually pull that off.
Oh, I agree. You know, like you said, there is a certain kind of actor who can play Bond.
Yeah.
And I think he's definitely one of them. You know, every time the role comes up, it's one of those things that people debate and argue about and throw out names, and I can see it. I can see it.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I could get behind an Idris Elba James Bond.
Sure.
But when we get back, we're going to talk about Skyfall and Lincoln. We got to go to a break. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. You're listening to Carr, Kevin Carr, and Kramer, Kristen Dreyer Kramer, on Fat Guys at the Movies. And we're talking that way because we're going to be talking about the new James Bond movie, which is Skyfall.
Yay.
I was very excited for this, and let's just jump right in and play the trailer. James Bond comes back from the dead again to face a computer genius villain with a personal axe to grind.
3 months ago, you lost the drive containing the identity of every agent embedded in terrorist organizations across the globe.
007 reporting for duty.
Where the hell have you been?
Enjoying death. I want to meet your employer.
How much do you know about fear?
All there is.
Well, not like this.
She sent you after me, not when you're not ready, not when you would likely die. Mommy was very bad.
What did you think?
Loved it.
Okay.
Absolutely loved it. You know, it took me a while to get used to Daniel Craig in the role. And the new...
Even, wait, in this movie or just in general?
In general.
Okay.
So ever since Casino Royale, you know, it wasn't the same. You know, it's darker and grittier and he's not as suave and smooth as you're used to James Bond being.
Yeah.
So it took me a while. But now I'm finally behind it.
Really?
Yes. After this, I'm finally behind it.
It took you three movies, so you weren't really sold on him for Casino Royale or Quantum of Solace?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. It was one of those things that just, it still felt a little bit off.
Okay.
For me.
Yeah.
But now I'm good.
Good. Good. Awesome. Well, you know, the thing is, I loved Casino Royale. I thought it was a fantastic reboot. And I'm not wild about reboots to begin with because I always think I'm like, oh, come on. Because that's the new thing. It's right. Instead of remaking it, they just, well, it's not a remake. It's a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the movie, the series had been around at the time for 45 years almost.
Right.
Well, you know, 40 years when they were making it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seemed to make sense because they had kept a continuity through the old Bond films. So when Pierce Brosnan was Bond, it was the same character from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was worthy to be rebooted, and the fact that the way they did it I thought was good. I'm a big fan of Craig as Bond. I think he works as Bond because he's kind of delivers a Connery-esque quality to
him. Okay, yeah, I can see that.
Whereas sort of like Pierce Brosnan was the pretty boy Bond, he was what Roger Moore brought in.
Yeah.
And Connery and Dalton were both that sort of scoundrelly kind of rugged James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
George Lazenby, the heck with George Lazenby, I don't care about him. But he would probably fall in the pretty boy category. But I enjoyed Skyfall. I thought it had mostly all the elements that you needed for a Bond film. You had the big action sequences, the big action set pieces, which were great.
There are some gorgeous fight scenes in this movie.
It's
gorgeous.
Awesome. And with Roger Deakins' cinematography, now I know most normal people, average people.
Who are those people?
Yeah, the people who aren't
I would like to
us.
Know those people.
They're not wild about the cinema. They don't like, oh, this is the cinematographer. The key grip from this movie. But people like us will notice that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Cinema files. And Deakins is a great cinematographer. And he does some really neat stuff with this movie.
There is one fight scene. The one in the building.
Yes.
That's shot entirely in silhouette.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous.
It's amazing to see. I'm actually going to... I want to watch this movie again in IMAX. They didn't screen it for us in IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to see it in IMAX again. Because I think it'll look good. But it had the action. It had the international locations. You know, they go from Turkey. And a lot of it takes place in London. But they do globetrot a little bit. And it had the Bond girls in it. And that was cool. It wasn't, like, just filled with Bond girls. But, you know, there was a part in the Roger Moore.
It's a little lighter than usual.
Yeah. I mean,
and I'm okay with that because I'm a girl.
Back during the Roger Moore days, he was just banging anything that came near him. He'd just be like, hey, Bond girl, look, I'm James Bond, baby. The panties would come right off.
Really?
Well, at least it was implied. The other thing, they did certain things in this movie that really were a throwback to the older films.
Yes.
I thought Adele's theme, the Skyfall theme, really felt, it was that very throaty, lusty, you know, Shirley Bassey kind of song. And that worked. It really, really worked. There's a part in there that almost brought me to tears where they give a tip of the hat and they use something from, I'm not gonna say what it is, but they use something from an old film.
Oh yes.
And then they break into the 60s music and I'm like, oh, that was really beautiful.
So. And I appreciated that too. There's plenty of the old Bond feel to it.
Yeah.
But still keeping the new Bond feel to it. So it has some of the old elements, but it's still darker and grittier and it's timely.
Yeah.
The story is more timely. The villain is totally crazy and over the top, but he's a timely villain.
Yeah. And he's relevant to what does go on today.
Right.
And it's not the first time that they kind of bring it in and say, well, you know, Bond's kind of an arc. He's a relic. You know, you don't need this sort of hands-on spy anymore as part of it. But that's been done before.
And they answer
before.
That.
Yeah. But they've done that before. There's a lot of stuff that's derivative of old Bond movies, actually, in this. But I liked how they did it and the reasons for it. And they also make it a little more personal.
Yes.
Which
and I love that.
They did that with Casino Royale. To a little bit. Well, to a high degree because of him falling in love.
Yeah.
But this one does get very personal. And
they
go
into the background more. And
yeah.
That is something that you don't expect.
No.
I definitely wasn't expecting that.
I liked how they did it. I don't want too much more. I don't want any more of Bond's backs. I like him being an enigma and a mystery, actually. What the only problem I had with this, you're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr and Chris Andrea Kramer, and we're talking about Skyfall, the new James Bond movie. The reservations I had with this is, first of all, it does kind of have a bit of a BBC miniseries feel, especially when they get into MI6 and a lot of the London scenes. And that's okay because BBC's really stepped up its game over the last 10 years or so in doing their own television movies. But it felt less like a Bond movie and more like modern BBC TV making in certain parts.
Interesting.
And it's a more intimate story and sort of like the thing that they're going after, the MacGuffin, if you will, is this hard drive that has all these names of agents that are embedded in terrorist organizations. And they kind of forget about that at some point in the movie because that's not at all what the movie's about. It's about Bond and the villain and M and that sort of thing.
The story definitely is a lot simpler than they have been recently.
Yeah.
Which I appreciated because Quantum was all over the place.
Quantum was a bit crazy. I like Quantum.
It was a mess. You know, it was interesting, but it was a mess, and I'm still not sure what it was about.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I'm one of the few that really liked Quantum of Solace simply because I felt it had the Bond elements, but yeah, it was a bit convoluted at times.
A bit, yeah.
Yeah. But I will say, I did like Skyfall quite a bit. So I'm giving it a rocks. What do you say?
I'm giving it a rocks, too.
All right. We only got about a minute here left, but I was going to say, let's just talk about... I just want to find out from you. If you want to hear from me, if you go to Fat Guys of the Movies, there's a bonus episode on there where I talk with somebody. I kind of do a retrospective of Bond, and you can hear a lot of my thoughts on that. And I'll throw some out here. But I want to find out from you, what was the first Bond film you saw?
You know, I don't even know.
Really?
I don't.
Have you seen all of them?
I don't think so.
Okay. There's 22.
I've watched them through the TNT Bond marathons that they have over, holiday weekend?
It's always over Thanksgiving, usually.
I used to spend all Thanksgiving, just whenever I had time, I would sit down and turn it on and watch whatever was playing.
Yeah.
So that's how I've become familiar with Bond, just by watching whatever happened to be on at the time.
Sort of random sampling.
There. Yes.
So do you have a favorite one? Either a favorite Bond or a favorite movie?
Oh, that's a tough question.
Really?
Yeah, I loved Pierce Brosnan as Bond,
yeah.
But I didn't really love any of his movies.
His movies weren't the strongest.
No. There were some that were really bad. And I saw a lot of them in theaters, too. And, you know, that was one of those things that you walk out and go, oh, really? I'm going to say that right now my favorite is Skyfall.
There you go. That makes it easy. All right. When we get back, we're going to be talking about Lincoln and the box office.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. We just got done talking about our little James Bond.
Little James Bond.
Yes, little James Bond. Skyfall.
Little Skyfall.
And now, next up, we have Lincoln.
Yes!
The Steven Spielberg film. And would you like to lead into our trailer here?
Yeah, absolutely. Lincoln has Daniel Day-Lewis starring as America's 16th president who doesn't kill any vampires, but he gets shot. I mean, spoiler alert.
No.
It's either the amendment or this Confederate peace. You cannot have both.
How many hundreds of thousands have died during your administration?
Congress must never declare equal those whom God created unequal.
Read the Constitution alone.
We are stepped out upon the world stage now, with the fate of human dignity in our hands. Blood's been spilled to afford us this moment. Now, now, now.
Steven Spielberg, he has been a busy guy lately.
I've heard of this man before, yes.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a little known director.
He did a lot of indie projects,
but he did two last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a little more than average, unless you're Woody Allen. And what
Spielberg movies tend to be bigger than Woody Allen's movies.
A little bit.
And Woody Allen just makes movies nowadays just as an excuse to
go on vacation.
The city. Yeah.
But there's a lot of buzz surrounding this one because, of course, Daniel Day-Lewis is in it.
Yes.
So anytime Daniel Day-Lewis makes a movie, there is buzz around it.
There is.
So what did you think?
You know what? When the movie started, I didn't know what to think. Because you look at it, he did War Horse last year, and you expect War Horse to be that. And War Horse was this grand, sweeping thing, and it was about war, and had war as the backdrop, had these fantastic battle sequences in it.
Fantastic, but bloodless.
But bloodless, true.
And that's a big difference here.
Big difference. And then you also say, well, Saving Private Ryan, he did that. And the movie opens with this battle scene from the Civil War, and it's very lame. It's a very lame, I mean, it's bloody and stuff, but it's not, it doesn't really grab you. I didn't feel it grabbing you, but you expect it to be about the Civil War. It's not. It's not about the Civil War. No. And I think he did that as saying, hey guys, this isn't Saving Private Ryan. It's not about this. It's about people talking.
It's true.
Because they go back and they have him talk. It's really about Lincoln trying to pass the 13th Amendment, which is the abolition of slavery.
Right.
And we saw it. They screened it for us the day after the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it incredibly relevant, having nothing to do with race, not about race.
No, I agree.
It has to do with the fact because on the day after the presidential election, a friend of mine on Facebook said, he's like, because we're from Columbus, Ohio, and the OSU Buckeyes is the hometown team. And he's like, wow, you read my Facebook page, you'd think the Buckeyes won and lost at the same time because you know, either people were happy or they were disappointed. One of the two. And people kind of complained about it. And I saw a lot of people saying, this country's as divided as ever and nothing ever gets done. And people are just playing politics and they're shaking their arms and stomping their feet.
Just like you're doing right now.
Yeah, it was. You can hear that on the radio. And I thought it was so relevant. Lincoln is so relevant because it showed the country's no more divided than it ever has been.
Right.
And this is how politics works. And politics is
Politics is messy.
It is making sausage. Making laws is like making sausage. And this shows that. It shows the vitriol. It shows people calling each other's names. It shows nasty campaigning. Mm-hmm. It shows backroom deals. It shows how people have to moderate their views. There's a character played by Tommy Lee Jones, Congressman Stevens, who is an abolitionist, a die-hard abolitionist, and they have a whole discussion about, look, you can't go in and suddenly say, for example, at that time of the day when this took place in 1865, you can't go in and say, I want the vote for black people.
And you can't even say that they're equal.
Yeah. You just have to say they can't be slaves.
Right.
And he, of course, is very resistant to that because he wants complete abolition. But that's how things are. You can't just go in as an extremist. And that's where they show Lincoln's prowess in there is that he's able to mediate that and moderate things and get things actually done. That's how Washington works. That's how Washington always works. Mm-hmm. And that's so apparent in this movie.
And, you know, you always see Abraham Lincoln as this man of virtue.
Yeah.
Who is, you know, pure and shining and spotless. And in this movie, he has to get a little dirty.
Oh, he gets very dirty.
Yeah.
And he has people who get dirty for him.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so much fun.
Yeah.
Because he's not this pure man of virtue. He's playing the game just like everybody else.
And he's doing it brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Day-Lewis does a fantastic job becoming Lincoln.
Oh, it is uncanny. Yeah. Sometimes it's creepy.
And the thing is, the only thing that makes it it's even more impressive is he's surrounded by some fantastic actors.
It's amazing. This cast.
Nonstop. You're like, oh, there's that guy.
Yeah.
And everyone's perfectly cast in it. And the thing is, like I said, it's a movie of people talking
mm-hmm.
for 2.5 hours, nonstop talking yeah. in rooms. That's what this movie is. So it's not War Horse, where you're going from place to place and battlefield.
And I'm okay with that because I didn't love War Horse.
See, I like War Horse. Mm-hmm. But I think that was it's daring filmmaking because it is so just sort of, well, for lack of a better term, mundane in terms mm-hmm. of the setup. But I couldn't stop watching it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is really interesting. Whereas sometimes, well, it reminds me of my dad saw Anonymous, which is that movie about Shakespeare to
sure.
Shakespeare writing.
Yep.
And I couldn't follow it because I didn't know my European history very well.
Mm.
And I know my American history better. So my dad, who's a big European history buff, loved mm-hmm. Anonymous. That's what I really got into this.
I was an English major. So
you probably loved that.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing about they do other things. They get into the nuance of politics and the reality of politics
mm-hmm.
because this was not just. I mean, it was showing Lincoln as convicted, as wanting this to happen, but it showed how he played with the law. It showed how
yep.
he handled it. And most people think, oh, Emancipation Proclamation, that's what freed the slaves. And they have a whole scene where they're like, no, it didn't.
Was it really even legal?
Yeah, it's like, well, I kind of played fast and loose with this, and if you really dissect this this way, and I'm like,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, this is the first time I've ever seen that brought to light,
and that is so riveting.
Yeah,
it is,
because they just completely deconstruct the Emancipation
yeah.
Proclamation,
and it's so smart too.
Yeah.
It is so cleverly done,
yeah.
And I was a little worried going into it because I'm not a huge fan of Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah,
you know, he just gets so into it and just overdoes it so much, but he doesn't this time.
Yeah. He's pretty reserved.
He's really subdued, and I really appreciated that. Although there's one scene toward the end
yeah.
where all of a sudden he slams his hand down on the table. I'm like, yeah. Here it comes.
There it is. I drink your milkshake.
Yes.
I drink your slave shake. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. We are just talking about Lincoln, which opens limited this week. It expands wide all over
next
the country
week,
next
yeah.
week. I give it a rocks. What do you give it?
I give it a rocks.
I was very impressed with it. It's probably one of the best written movies I've seen
mm-hmm. oh,
in
yeah.
a long time. Real quick, we've got a couple minutes here, about 2 minutes. We're going to talk quickly about the box office, throw out some predictions. There's only little James Bond in
little
Skyfall.
James Bond. I'm sticking by that one.
Are you going to stick by? I think it's going to make $500 billion.
Oh yeah.
What do you think? Give me your actual prediction. It's obviously going to come in number one. Let's go ahead and start taking numbers on this. It's already grossed $287 million overseas over like
mm-hmm.
2 weeks. So what are your thoughts on how much do you think it's going to make?
You know, you actually let me prepare for this, and I appreciate that because I'm not a numbers person at all. So, you know, I look back at
it's going to be a blue movie.
I know, it's so hard. And I was a math major for so long.
Wow.
So, you know, I should know this. But I'm going to give it 60.
60 million?
I'm going to give it 60.
Ooh, that is reserved. I am going to say 92 million.
Really?
Yeah, I say 92 million. I don't think it's going to crack 100 million simply because it's November and it's a little early.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's not opening against anything else, so it'll get the big one. I don't think it's going to be, but I think it's going to do very well because its first weekend, I think it made 150 some million.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be tempted to say just duplicate that, but I just think that's a lot.
I don't know. I'm just looking at the last ones and, you know,
no, you're right.
Casino Royale only made 40.
Casino Royale came in second to Happy Feet. Did you know that?
And Quantum was 67.
Oh, okay.
So
I'm going to say I'm going to stick by 92.
Okay.
So you say 60.
I'll say 60.
We'll see who got that right next week and see.
Can I say 92.5?
No, you cannot do a Price is Right garbage. 92 million and $1, Drew Carey. No, I think that's what. And then I think, you know, Wreck-It Ralph will come in second. I wouldn't be surprised if Wreck-It Ralph makes a good 30, 35. I think it's going to
mm-hmm.
have great holding power.
Sure.
But Flight, I hope to God Flight just tanks, but. Anyways, that's it. We're done talking Skyfall and Lincoln. When we come back, we're gonna read our listener email, and then we're gonna talk DVDs.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr.
Good.
Now, we have an email to discuss this week.
Yes, we
which
do.
Is always exciting.
It's always nice to actually realize there are listeners out there.
Yes, instead of us just sitting here in a box talking at each other.
Or people that are actually responding. Because people just passively just listen to the radio, absorb information.
Is that what they do? Because I don't normally listen to the radio looking like that. But that's just me.
I have this picture of everybody who listens to the show as being the people from WALL-E.
Nice.
In the show.
Yeah. You did kind of look like the people from WALL-E when you did that.
Just drinking Slurpees.
Yeah. So anyway, the email says, do you believe in guilty pleasures?
Well, this is from Gabe.
Okay, Gabe.
Yeah,
yes.
Gabe from, we're going to start calling him Red State Gabe.
Okay.
He's from a red state. He's not a red state guy, but he's from a red state. He's from Arizona.
There are a few of them. Do we call everybody who's from a red state?
No.
Red state somebody?
I'm just going to call him Red State Gabe because it'll irritate him.
Okay. So Red State Gabe says, do you believe in guilty pleasures?
Mm-hmm.
Another movie critic friend of mine doesn't use that term as he just simply says he likes or loves it without shame.
Mm-hmm.
The way he puts it, to sum it up, is that admitting it's a guilty pleasure is claiming you're wrong for liking what you like. But he could be wrong. So what do you think?
I have to agree with at least in theory with what he's saying his film critic's friend says. I don't think you should feel guilty about liking a movie. I think you should, if you love something, love it. And,
mm-hmm.
and even if it's crap, love it if it's crap. I love a lot of crap.
Yes, you do.
So don't feel ashamed of that because that puts you into snobbery territory. But I think you can define a guilty pleasure as something that not that you feel guilty about. You can absolutely unabashedly love it. But
oh, yeah.
At least with the recognition that
– that it's not a good movie.
Yeah. Well, that other people don't agree with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. I have all kinds of movies that I would classify as guilty pleasures. Now,
sure.
we just talked about Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Last week.
And that is a guilty pleasure because
it's
that movie is horrible.
It's terrible.
It is such a terrible movie, but I love watching it. And I could watch it over and over and over again.
And you also have to love it not ironically. I mean, if you watch Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, if you love it because, oh, it's so funny on Mystery Science Theater, that doesn't count. You can love Manos the Hands of Fate because it's an absolute train wreck and they've done it on Mystery Science Theater, but it's a terrible movie. I don't think there's very many people who actually want to sit down and watch it without Joel and the Bots making fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I think that the guilty pleasure – you have to love it even as terrible as it is.
Mm-hmm. For me, everything that Nicolas Cage makes –
yes.
Is a guilty pleasure.
There's something just delicious about his awfulness.
Oh, yes.
And there's some movies of his that are terrible. Like Bangkok Dangerous was – I finally saw that. And I'm like, wow, this is like bad even for Nicolas Cage. But like
so craptastic.
The National Treasure movies, they are so fun.
Yeah.
And they're – I mean,
are
I don't feel –
are they great movies? Not so much. But
I don't feel guilty about liking them.
No.
But I recognize they're not – they didn't win any Academy Awards.
Right.
And they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think I totally believe in guilty pleasures, and I think a lot of times it depends on how you first saw it. You know, if you saw a movie, I love the Star Wars movies. I people would say that's probably a guilty pleasure because it's so popular to rip on them.
Mm-hmm.
I love them. The prequels. Oh, there's problems with them, sure, but I love them. I will watch them. I saw Phantom Menace in 3D with my kids. It was the greatest experience ever. Because they gave us little toys and we had special glasses.
Nice.
It was just so much fun. And I absolutely love it. And it's what you grew up with. I know people – I call it the Goonies effect.
Oh, yeah. There's
a lot of people who love Goonies, but
– I like it.
But you know what? It's not that good of a – if you dissect it, it's a terrible movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not a great movie.
But there's a lot of people who just spent a lot of time watching it.
But it's charming and it's nostalgic.
Absolutely.
And that's a big part of it.
And it's the same thing with Indiana Jones, why I unabashedly love those.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people then grow up and they expect it to be more. And you're like – because people are like complaining about the Crystal Skull. And I'm like, oh, there's some goofy, crazy stuff going on in that movie. But I remember when Neil Miller hosted the show, we reviewed it. And he goes, in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, they parachute out of an airplane with a life raft.
Oh, yeah.
So don't go throwing this nuking the fridge business at me. So, yes, absolutely guilty pleasures.
Mm-hmm.
But wear them with a badge of honor.
Okay.
That's what I say. What time? What is it next? What do we got next?
Oh, you know what? It is time for the DVD roundup.
That's right. Yeehaw. Speaking of Indiana Jones and his whip.
So, I kind of like doing that.
It's a big...
I look forward to that.
You look forward
week.
To the whip? Yeah. I should bring a whip into the magical studio in the sky.
Please don't.
We would be in the emergency room so quickly. Anyways, it's a Christmas movie week because everyone waited for Halloween to be over and then they dropped all their Christmas releases.
They're kind of like my mom.
Okay.
November 1st, the Christmas movie music starts and that's it.
Say, I have to wait till Thanksgiving to listen to the Christmas music,
yeah,
but
I
then
can't
I'm
stand
like
it.
Nonstop.
Usually by December 1st, I just want to kill myself.
Yeah, it's about a month.
My dad and I would sit there and, you know, the Christmas music is all playing and we're like, oh, when is Christmas over?
I love Christmas music except for Christmas Shoes. I want to punch that song in the face.
I don't even know that song.
Oh, you have to listen to it. It's so bad. It's
is it
so
a
awful.
Guilty pleasure?
It's not even a guilty pleasure. Okay. It is just such garbage. Okay. It is such an awful show. I will get a copy of it and we'll talk about it like as Christmas comes around.
Okay.
Anyways, the Christmas movies that are, they got the Muppet Christmas Carol, which is out on Blu-ray mm-hmm. for the first time. And they do the thing when you pause it, it goes to an intermission and they sing Christmas carols.
Oh, too. I love that.
Yeah. Because they did
love
that with
how they do that.
The Muppets, the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They didn't
mm-hmm.
sing Christmas carols, but they sang. There's also Prep and Landing, another Disney property that's these little elf TV specials.
Mm-hmm.
They put those on Blu-ray. They released, I think they released it on DVD last year, and this year they're putting it on Blu-ray.
Okay.
So, and then the other one, Arthur Christmas. Did you see that?
I didn't. I missed that one.
You should check that out.
That's what I've heard. I've heard it's pretty good.
It has a bizarrely terrible trailer. You watch the marketing for it. It just doesn't look good, but it's a charming little film.
Well, there you go.
It's about Santa Claus's son who's supposed mm-hmm. to take over, who wants to take over the family business, and shenanigans happen.
Oh, shenanigans!
Shenanigans!
How I love Christmas shenanigans.
Yeah, and then there's also Wreck 3, which is not a Christmas movie.
I was just going to say, Merry Christmas.
Have you seen the Wreck movies?
No.
For those
that
who don't know,
one that I didn't search out.
Yeah, if you saw Quarantine about 4, 5, 6 years ago, mm-hmm. that was the one with the super rabies that took over the fire station.
Right.
Or the apartment building, that it was the original Spanish version of it was Wreck. And it kind of goes in this weird spiritual demonic direction.
Oh, great.
And they did Wreck. Then Wreck 2 also takes place in there. It's a different side of it. And then Wreck 3 is how it apparently starts, and it's at a wedding. And it's a little bit bloody. But it's not found footage. It starts out as found footage, and then they cut to making it a regular film, which I appreciate.
That's good.
That they abandoned the whole found footage thing for that movie. And then there's also, well, you know, they did release The Amazing Spider-Man last week.
Was that last week or was it this week?
It was on the 9th. It was, I'm so confused here. No,
you don't know what day it is?
Yeah, they released on the 9th. And
all those Friday releases always throw me off.
They always mess up.
Why
because
do they
that's
do
the
that?
Thing. They say, oh, they're going to. Normally, DVDs and Blu-rays come out on Tuesday, and now this Amazing Spider-Man you can get on DVD, Blu-ray, 3D, Blu-ray. Did you like that movie?
I did. I didn't love it, but okay. I liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. I
it was a little slow.
I liked the last half because it didn't just retread
mm-hmm.
the first hour.
Yeah.
So. Do you have anything else to add? I think you had one to add.
There are a couple others, actually, that you've missed. Also, mm-hmm. Your Sister's Sister, which was... Oh, what was that?
I don't know. It just sounds terrible.
It's a mumblecore film.
I'm not a big mumblecore fan.
But I'm not either. But this is the best mumblecore film I've ever seen.
Really?
I saw it at the Toronto Film Festival in 2011 mm-hmm. and was blown away.
Really?
Yes.
Physically
it's,
blown away.
I was. And it's with Mark Duplass, of course.
Of course.
But also...
that's what he does.
Emily Blunt and Rosemary DeWitt, who actually pull up his performance on an awful lot.
Really?
Yes, because they're used to scripting movies.
Mm.
And so they're used to the pauses and the flow of a normal movie.
Mm.
And instead of just rambling like mumblecore films often do, this one actually has breaks and pauses, and it feels natural instead of just rambly and nuts.
Okay.
So it's really well done.
Cool.
And, of course, another one that I know you're looking forward to me mentioning.
I know this is coming.
Because it's one of my very favorite movies. Sunset Boulevard comes out on Blu-ray this week.
I did not like Sunset Boulevard. I take so much crap on Rotten Tomatoes for not liking Sunset Boulevard.
I adore Sunset Boulevard. So I got my copy and I'm very excited.
Are you ready for your close-up, Mr. DeMille?
Shut up. I am. Thank you,
you
very much.
You.
I'm ready for my close-up.
Yes. We got a little bit of time left. The stinker of the week. Did you have any other ones you wanted to add?
No, go ahead.
Stinker of the week is It's a SpongeBob Christmas because I'm so tired of SpongeBob SquarePants. He's somebody who needs to dry up.
There you go.
Quite literally. The review wrap up. We've got Skyfall. We both said rock.
Mm-hmm.
And we said Lincoln both rock.
Yes.
Both say rock. So it's a rocking kind of weekend. Box office predictions. Look at it for next week. I say Skyfall is going to make $92 million. Kristen says it's going to make $60 million. We'll see who wins next week. And we'll also be talking Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn 2, Silver Linings Playbook. And I think that's about it. Thank you all. We will talk to you next week.